This is Brendan Lyons, state editor for the Times Union, and welcome to another Capital Confidential podcast. I am here with Times Union editor Casey Seiler discussing what many believe is the legislature's long overdue repeal of a statute that has prevented the public disclosure of police disciplinary records in New York for more than 40 years.
Hey folks, I'm Casey Seiler. I'm the editor of the Times Union. Today we're going to be talking about another interesting outcome of the current political moment that we find ourselves in. And that is, of course, what appears to be the imminent passage by the state legislature and apparently signing by Governor Andrew Cuomo of a set of bills meant to address police misconduct and related issues. And the biggest one about them that we're going to talk about today is what appears to be a repeal of a statute within state law known as 50A. So for the uninitiated, what is 50A? What specifically does it prevent?
Well, 50A is a statute that was written into state civil rights law in the mid-1970s. And it was intended at that time to prevent police officers from being cross-examined by defense attorneys who were armed with a police officer's personnel jackets. And it could be for everything from an off-duty DWI to a domestic dispute with a spouse that got recorded in their personnel file. And so you'll recall that about 4 years ago, or it was 4 years ago, the Times Union, we went into the state library and dug out the paperwork from the creation of that legislation, and also interviewed he was still alive at that point, Senator Padovan from New York City, who had been the sponsor in the Senate of the legislation. And what we learned was that the original intent of that statute had been warped through the years, through the decades, between the expansion of its interpretation by law enforcement agencies, as well as courts, who have really been a difficult battleground for newspapers and others trying to get information. You know, the courts, for instance, have interpreted it that this statute that blocks access to a police officer's personnel records, or not even just personnel records, but internal investigations as well, because police agencies have now decided that nearly any matter that involves an internal investigation is a personnel matter. And so, you know, we've seen the court decisions where they have extended that protection to former police officers, to dead police officers. The state police in New York have invoked 50A to prevent the release of files. In one instance, we tried to get records on a former senior investigator who took his own life in the midst of an investigation of corruption and malfeasance at a downstate barracks. They said, nope, 50A applies even posthumously. So, and you described it when you kicked this off as saying a political moment, and it's clearly political. It is, but it's a good thing for the public. It's a good thing for news agencies to try to get to the truth, to have this repealed. But there have been so many cases in New York. Eric Garner, for instance, Eric Garner's family, who died in a similar circumstance in New York City at the hands of police in a chokehold matter, that didn't lead to the repeal of 50A. And yet that family, interestingly enough, his mother and others have fought tooth and nail to try to get the records on what happened in that case and what happened to the police officers in that case. So this is certainly a transformational moment for law enforcement in New York State.
You wrote a couple of years ago about a case involving, I believe it was a state trooper who was involved in hit and run, and even those records could not be released. Can you give a little bit more of the background there?
Sure. So in that instance, you know, with the Hearst Corporation behind us, we've tried to chip away at 50A through the years, through court cases, through FOIL cases, and test the boundaries, if you will. And it had come away licking our wounds in court decisions. So Brian Beardsley was a New York State trooper, and he and his female partner had attended a party. The party, I believe, was attended by many others too, you know, in law enforcement, a district attorney out there and such. On the way home from that party, and Beardsley had later admitted that he had had a few beers at that party, he ran over. Now, it's still in dispute who may have been driving, but his pickup truck ran over a person in the road. Mr. Beardsley, who was off duty, took the position that it was unsafe for him to remain there in this rural location on a dark road with a body there. So he left the scene with his partner and went on home and called it in from there. And I think at some point it became that his female partner was driving the truck, and they took the position that, he was already dead when we ran over this gentleman. So, you know, it wasn't our fault. So anyway, you fast forward, the New York State, there's a outside investigation that determines there's no criminality here. No breathalyzer was given, no blood test was taken of the trooper. And in addition, the individual, he was then subsequently the target of an internal investigation by the state police. We wanted those records. We wanted to know what the state police learned through their interviews, presumably of people who were at the party, the sheriff's deputies who showed up at his door, and all these different things. And they took the position, the state police, that Mr. Beardsley, who was fired by the state police, had his records cloaked due to 50A. He's a former state trooper. So we brought that case. We got as far as the appellate division in Albany. And strikingly, it was Judge Karen Peters who wrote the decision saying that, nope, 50A even applies to former police officers. And Bob Freeman, the former State Committee on Open Government director, was, I recall, shocked by that, because for years, even decades, he had been advising news organizations that 50A no longer applied if you're not a police officer, because the intent was to prevent you from being cross-examined by a defense attorney. So you could see that underscores how a court decision buttressed and made it even harder for the public to get records, because so often you see in these cases where police officers retire in the face of an internal investigation. It is a common, sometimes the agency will go to them and say, we're going after you, we're going to terminate you, or you can resign. So they will take the exit out the door rather than facing some sort of discipline or mark on their permanent record.
You noted that that the statute speaks to disciplinary records, but it's even broader than that, or has been expanded by court decisions to include basically any record that could be used in a promotional decision. Is that correct?
Right. Continued employment. Yeah.
So that could literally be anything, including, for example, body camera footage. And this has come up in our dealings with the Albany Police Department, as well as other entities, you know, where they have claimed that body camera footage of interactions with members of the public could conceivably end up being used in a decision as to, for example, whether or not somebody makes sergeant or something like that, and is therefore they were treating it as covered under 50A.
True. And interestingly enough, there, Albany PD, once they've had their dashboard cameras and their body cameras, in instances where the police have acted appropriately, even heroically in some instances, they have no problem pushing out that footage to the public to say, look at the conduct of our officers. They behaved appropriately. And then sometimes you might see instances where they do release footage where it shows an officer may have engaged in misconduct. But the bottom line is it's murky. It gives them discretion to pick and choose what camera footage we can see. That defies the whole intent of dashboard cams and body cams, isn't it? So that there's transparency, so that the public can see for themselves, this is what happened according to the camera. Some of that's changed, because now look at the First Street incident from a couple years ago where these officers engaged in the use of force as they broke up a house party. And one officer was arrested almost immediately. and charged with assault and charged with official misconduct. Others were trying to fire several other officers. So in that instance, because there was so much cell phone footage of what was going on, the police and district attorney, I think, took the position, let's show them everything, because it became, it would be akin to Minneapolis police right now saying, we're going to show you all the footage from the George Floyd case because of how bad it looks. So sometimes they get their hand forced. But the bottom line is that there should not be discretion there.
But I believe even in that case, wasn't the footage only released the first street incident we're talking about from last spring of 2019, or I guess late winter of spring of 2019. That footage was only released because a judge put it out. Isn't that right? Or did the cops and the DA basically clear it?
No, I recall the district attorney's office allowing us to go in and look at additional footage. They had a lot of footage because there were so many officers on the scene there.
That's
so
right.
I would submit that they were transparent in that instance. But you fast forward over a year, one officer remains charged, his case is languished, and it does appear now that none of the other officers will be charged with crimes, which is, I think, to the public and the people that are there, some of them might be troubled by that.
I also want to mention the case of Edson Thevenin, who was shot dead by a police officer in Troy as he allegedly fled a DUI stop. In that case, you discovered just about a year ago this month, that attorneys for Mr. Thevenin's widow, who brought a federal lawsuit against the Troy police and I believe the city as well as the officer involved personally, that there had been an internal police review of the matter that the city had declined to share with attorneys for the widow. They only found out about it through a leak. And the city then tried to claim that it was exempt from disclosure under 50A, despite the fact that this was a federal, not a state lawsuit that the widow had brought.
And in addition, there was a discovery order. So if they were going to withhold that from the plaintiffs in this federal civil rights lawsuit, they were required, you could argue, and were, to tell the judge, listen, by the way, we did a year-long internal affairs investigation. The person who led that investigation determined that the officer who fired the fatal shots lied about what happened, forced this man's car into a Jersey barrier, and opened fire with possibly without justification, or at least not in line with what he had contended. He, you know, Officer French, Sergeant French had said, I opened fire because I was pinned against my cruiser by a revving car, and so I shot. Experts who analyzed the trajectory of the bullets concluded that he was moving at the point that he was firing these shots, so not pinned as he had said. They also concluded, and this was not Detroit police, but an outside expert, that the car of Mr. Thevenin had been forced off the road. It didn't crash on its own. They lined up the scuff marks between the patrol car and Mr. Thevenin's car. And so either way, that's an instance where a police department, which by the way, in 2020, still doesn't have dashboard cams or body cameras. And so that's an instance where they are taking the position that 50A is so strong, we don't even have to tell you if we have a record that might be subject to disclosure. And they were scolded pretty harshly by that from the U.S. magistrate, who then not only made them turn it over to the defense, but made it public as well. I think with an eye toward realizing that this was a very important record that the public should see for what it's worth.
So moving up to the State House now, the bill that the Assembly and the Senate are apparently going to act on is effectively a straight full repeal of 58. There was an early version of the bill that was circulated last week that essentially would have only made kind of the repeal provisions applicable to cases in which officers had a civilian complaint against them. In other words, they were in the doghouse and therefore their disciplinary records were kind of up for grabs, or at least, you know, would be responsive to FOIL. That was roundly condemned, I think, by many who were pushing for full repeal. So tell us a bit about what this legislation would do, and if you were in bill drafting, how would you tweak it to make it even stronger than it is today?
Well, having talked to some of the Senate aides and even the lawmakers behind this, the retold version that is moving through the legislature this week, their intent, they said, is to make records of police misconduct public. They don't want loopholes. And so they've tried to alleviate that in the language that they put through. The problem with opening it up only to complaints is that there are often instances where there is misconduct. Say that an off-duty trooper crashes his car into a house. Troopers come, and he's visibly intoxicated. They put him in the patrol car. They call a tow truck. They convince the homeowner everything's good, and off they go. And so 6 months later, that trooper, God forbid, kill somebody in a DWI crash. The concern was that the state police could argue that since that earlier incident wasn't the result of a complaint and may or may not have triggered an internal investigation, it's not subject to the law as to the disclosure rules as written. So I think the legislature is trying to find a balance between allowing the public to have records of import that involve police misconduct by limiting it to cases that affect the public, an officer's use of force, an officer's interaction with the public, matters that concern the public, as opposed to, say, we shouldn't. And I agree, if a trooper gets a letter in his file because he broke the rules and didn't wear a Stetson during a traffic stop, that's not a matter that really is important to the public. And so the legislature, their intent here, they said, is to try to make this bulletproof, to essentially give us access to the records of consequence involving police misconduct, pattern behavior, systemic behavior. And legislators, by the way, which is a fair point. So the police union today came out and said, okay, we're still worried about our personal information. That's a hollow argument, because they're protecting their personal information with this new legislation. But they've called on the New York State Legislature and say, in the interest of equal, being equal, how about if you guys make your personnel records? Because as we all know, the New York State Legislature is not technically subject to FOIL. And so I think it's a good call on their part.
Let's talk a little bit about the executive chamber politics here. The governor has been dealing with this question for maybe 10 days. I think it was probably, right around the very end of May that he began to get questions about whether or not he would support a repeal of 50A. His response was basically, hey, I'll sign whatever they bring me, which is sort of what the governor says when he really kind of would rather not get involved in kind of the negotiations on these things. But the governor also made the claim that he does not believe, or at least did not believe, that 50A actually applied and had the same kind of broad effect that it did, that he thought that localities and municipalities just used it as a crutch to get out of releasing these disciplinary records. You and I have had discussions about how we find that argument to be rather unconvincing on the governor's part.
I do. I was yearning for an opportunity to have him sit on a sofa in the executive mansion and I could roll in a chalkboard and explain to him through the years why he was wrong, including on the fact that his own state police that he controls have been one of the biggest invokers of 58 through the years. They have been essentially Fort Knox when it comes to internal police records. In most instances, when I've written about, you know, allegations of misconduct in the New York State Police, it's only been through either leaks getting the information or discovery and disclosure in court cases, especially federal court cases where you would get to it. So the governor, you know, on the one hand, he's saying the NYPD, they used to give this stuff out and then they stopped and they could still do that. And, you know, he kept pushing it to the mayors and city police forces, but he was tone deaf on, well, governor, what about your own state police? And by the way, the attorney general that you're putting in charge of these independent investigations is the one that has gone full court press in the courts, all the way sometimes to the appellate division, maybe the court of appeals, to protect 50A within the ranks of the state police. So it was kind of a little bit disingenuous or misinformed, perhaps.
Do you, and from what you've heard, do you think other reporters have essentially a wish list of FOIL requests that they are champing at the bit for the repeal of 50A to submit in the hopes of digging into issues that that have remained veiled for many, many years?
Sure. It could be. I think the one thing that you hope here is that it doesn't, that members of the press, members of the public, advocacy groups don't use the overturning of this statute to then go back years and years and years and try to get records on police that may, you know, damage someone's reputation unnecessarily, go after issues that don't import. So in my view, I think that if we wanted to go back, for instance, and look at, here was a case where police said, this is what happened when we shot this unarmed individual during a traffic stop, that would be a good, legitimate use of this provision to go in to try to get the internal records maybe that we've never seen. We've had instances, as you know, of families saying that my son didn't hang himself. We think that they choked him to death and then made it look like a suicide. Those are cases that I think that might be worth using this to go back, you know, but you also want to make sure that it's not becoming such a weapon right away to try to undermine the credibility or destroy reputations of police officers unnecessarily, that the law enforcement unions can then say, see what you've done to us. And that's, you know, it's a balance. When we won the case of getting the list of names of Albany police officers in our court of appeals case, they had purchased machine guns for on-duty purposes. No, they weren't used in the Albany City Police Force. And so they got those machine guns in fear that their right to buy those types of weapons was going to be taken away. They used the department, one, to get the weapons, and two, to get them tax-free because they used department letterhead. The police force argued in part that we would just run the list of names, or actually it was an appellate judge who asked, well, what do you want to do with the names? And our counsel said, well, judge, that's really up to us. And he says, well, you're just going to publish the names and embarrass all these officers? But in the end, we never did. We never published that list. We just wanted to see the information to look at who the officers were. We may have published it if we had decided. But my point was just that just because you get information doesn't mean you always need to publish it either.
I really appreciate your taking the time. If in fact 50A is repealed, I think it's in no small part because of the reporting that you have done over the course of the last couple of years. Our editorial board has kind of backed up that journalism with really good, strong opinion pieces. This has been an issue for state news gathering organizations as well for years and years. And I would also like to note that we are talking to Brendan Lyons about a week after it was announced that he won the Michael Hendricks Journalist of the Year Award from the State Associated Press Association for his work on the type of stories we're talking about, issues of pushing back against powerful institutions, trying to increase public transparency. And I thank you for that work, as I think all of our readers should thank you as well.
Thanks for the nod. I appreciate that.
And that concludes our Capital Confidential podcast. Thank you for your support. And please, if you have not yet done so, consider subscribing to the Times Union to get the latest and most important news delivered to your door or through an online subscription.